Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
Hey, friends.
Welcome back.
Well, we're excited to get into a topic that I think is really present for us. I know it is, and for a lot of our coworkers as well. Maybe even today, it was present a little bit for me.
For you. Culture stress, first of all. That's what we're talking about, is culture stress. And I think maybe because we took a trip to Thailand and re-entered, sometimes that's a chance for me to notice more.
For sure.
Contrasting those two cultures, which are like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yep.
And hot season.
Hot season will do it.
It makes us more irritable. And a coworker recently told me that they noticed when they're a few months out from stateside, they start getting more irritated with the culture.
True.
And I've been noticing that.
Yeah, we are kind of having that senioritis. We're just about a month from our departure back to the States. And so, yeah, I'm sure that that's a part of it as well. 3.5 years for this term. And so I think just the cumulative effect. Hey, before we go on, we do have some other important
news. Yes, we hit 100,000
downloads. Yeah, that seems significant. We're coming up on 4 years also that we've been doing this podcast. I guess next month will be 4 years also when we head to the States.
So thanks, listeners.
Yeah.
This has been really, really fun and a blessing for us.
It has been.
If you have a review you want to post, apparently that's supposed
five stars.
To help.
Yeah. Bump it up.
Yeah. So as Jesse said, we've been having some culturally stressful moments together and as a family and individually. And I have found myself in those moments asking myself the question, truly, like, how do I shepherd my heart right now? What is the biblical response, right?
You would think we'd get better at this. We're 19 years on the field. You would think, like, you just, as the time goes on, that you become more gentle, more accepting, so much more positive. You're able to laugh things off. You can ask my kids if that's the case with me sometimes.
Right. We still deal with even some of the same things we dealt with in our first year.
Yeah, very beginning.
But I think for me, I'm more familiar with those feelings.
That's true.
I notice it. I know what's going on inside me. I know what's going to pass. Mm. So I feel like I'm a little more familiar with how to handle it, but I still mess up.
There's also a lot more good on the other side of it to kind of counterbalance it when those things do come. There's a lot of awesome relationships and people and history that we can look back on as we've been in this place and in this culture that give us a good sense of lift and buoyancy while we're here as well.
Yeah. And so we have listeners that are preparing to come overseas, some that are in their first term, some that have been on the field for more than 2 decades. And culture stress is something that we all will deal with. It's part of the calling. So to maybe speak to some of our first termers in a way that I hope will make you all feel seen, and maybe this will be reflective of how you might feel at times, I'm going to read an article that I wrote in July of 2006 out loud to you, okay? So this was—
When you were 14.
Right. I was 26. We've been married 2 years. We've been on the field about 9 months. And we were re-entering into South Asia from Thailand, and I really had just a unique experience with the Lord during this time. And the Lord spoke to me in one of the most powerful ways that I would count on one hand in my life. And so I still remember it very, very fondly. And even reading this today was just encouraging to my heart. So again, this is 26-year-old Shaney speaking to you, okay? And I entitled it, "The Honeymoon's Over." So at the time, I had shared it in our prayer newsletter and things. Okay? Here goes. Before we moved overseas, Jesse and I learned about the different stages of culture shock that we should expect to go through as we adjust to our new culture. During the first stage, the honeymoon stage, one steps off the plane and is so excited to be in his new home. He notices all the cultural differences and wants to love and embrace them all. In short, he sees life through rosy glasses. I didn't realize it, but this is where I was for the most part during our first 8 months here. I absolutely loved living in Nepal. It was like a dream come true to me. I loved the food, and we ate it every single day, usually twice a day, rice, lentils, and vegetables twice a day. I can count the number of times I cooked American food on my hands. I wore the Nepali dress, every single day. We spent almost every waking minute with Nepalis, and when I lay in bed at night, Nepali words swam around in my head. I loved our city. I loved riding around on our motorcycle, haggling at the vegetable market, drinking milk tea, riding in rickshaws. I didn't mind squatty potties or dirty little restaurants, all the stairs or people walking into our house without knocking. I loved the fact that we're the only Americans in our city because I wanted to be completely immersed in the culture. The more, the better. That's the goal, right? To, air quotes, live like they do. I didn't really understand why other people with our organization were having rough times. Why are they complaining about the food? Why do they spend so much time together? Why do they talk so much about the things in America that they miss? Who cares about malls, cleanliness, and nice restaurants? Why are they always using hand sanitizer and soaking their fruit in iodine? It's not that dirty here. We even went to Thailand once during that time, just 2 months after we got to Nepal. Even then, while we were in Thailand, surrounded by cleanliness, wonderful restaurants, and beef, I was thinking about Nepal every day. I sat in my hotel room and studied Nepali. I found the Nepalis who were there and talked to them. Last month, my mom and my aunt came and spent 2 weeks with us. While they were here, I saw Nepal through new eyes, their eyes. Eyes that were fresh from America, eyes that had never seen the third world before, that had never seen such poverty before. Eyes that had never had to get used to seeing dirty, half-clothed children on the street every day. Or people living in little lean-tos that we think aren't fit for cattle. Or a city full of old, broken-down buildings, dirt roads, and trash everywhere. Why don't these things bother me? Why are my mom and my aunt crying? Is it really that bad here? It's surely not that bad, is it? We're happy here. Then we went to Thailand for 2 weeks for our annual meeting. I wasn't really that excited about going. Other people from our organization were just raving about how excited they were to have Western food, Starbucks, and good shopping, but I didn't really feel like I needed a break. Sometime around our third day in Thailand, Jesse and I went to get a massage together, a whopping $5 for an amazing one-hour massage. As I lay there, something unexpected happened. All of a sudden, I realized that I had so much tension built up inside me that I had been pushing down and convincing myself wasn't there. I realized I did need a break from Nepal. I do like cleanliness and luxury. I do enjoy having a variety of food and not just rice all the time. I do enjoy wearing American clothes. It all came bursting out of me like a volcano. What a relief! It's okay for me to enjoy these worldly pleasures while we're here in Thailand. It's okay for me to be incredibly tired of living in a foreign third world country with no American friends around. It's okay to prefer cleanliness over filth and prosperity over poverty. I was raised in America, and there are things about American culture that I love. So, I absolutely ate up our time in Thailand. I ate delicious food, watched movies, got 3 massages, a pedicure, and 3 new pairs of shoes. I wore shorts and capris. I spoke English all day long and enjoyed time with wonderful close friends. I even held hands with my husband in public. Then we came back to Nepal. This was the 4th time that we have entered Nepal from another country, and this time was the hardest for me. I prayed on the plane for God to prepare my heart to serve him there, and I tried to muster up a desire to be there. But I was a little afraid, especially of facing the isolation we sometimes feel in our city. As we rode through the streets of Kathmandu in our taxi, my heart hurt as I looked at the poverty around me. It seemed to me bigger than ever before. Horns were blaring, thick exhaust coming in the window, people with nothing to do sitting on the sides of the road, piles of trash here and there. The poverty here cannot be overestimated, I realized. It is horrible, disgusting, ugly, and in my face. I should hate seeing it. God did not create people to live like this. It's all because of human sin, and my heart should cry out with pain often as I live here. I do not understand it. I look at the faces of the people on the streets. It's because I love them. That's why I'm here, right? God has given me this special love for Nepali people, and that's why I'm here, right? I tried to convince myself, but I knew that wasn't the reason, or at least the main reason. I don't even know most of these people, and many times I don't feel any love for the people here. Sometimes I'm angry with them or look down upon them. Sometimes I'm even disgusted with them. That is just reality. Then God spoke to me very clearly as I sat in silence looking out the taxi window. He said, "Do you love me? Then feed my sheep." Tears come to my eyes as I think about it. God rarely speaks to me so clearly, and he gave me the answer I desperately needed. I am here because I love Jesus. I love him with my whole heart, with everything in me. There's absolutely nothing I want to do with my life than please him. That is what keeps me here, despite the sacrifices. I do love many Nepali people, but that doesn't keep me here. There are some people in America that I love more and that I miss very much. I'm living in Nepal because I love God, and God loves the people of Nepal. He created them in his image to worship him, and he has sent me here to feed his sheep in Nepal. That is why I am here, and that is what I cling to. I have complete peace in my heart living here. I know this is where God wants us to be. God gives me many gifts to enjoy here. I have an amazing husband and think marriage is the best thing on the planet, but I do not try to cover up the ugliness of the sights I see every day anymore. I do not try to pretend that our life is easy or that I don't miss family sometimes. Yet in the midst of the harsh sights, I see God. He is calling out to be seen, to be worshiped here. I see him in the mountains. I see the beautiful snow caps peeking through the smog. I see him in a bright flower on the side of the road, poking up through the heap of trash. And most of all, I see him in faces. Sometimes beautiful, sometimes ugly, sometimes smiling, sometimes crying. People, eternal souls whom he created for his glory. Souls that do not know their creator. Souls that are groping around in complete darkness, worshiping idols made of stone. The task is overwhelming. We live in a sea of lostness. There is absolutely nothing I can do but turn to the Lord. He is the shepherd. He is the one who finds and saves lost sheep. Father, help us. How do we get the gospel out to millions of people? Oh, how we need you, Lord.
Wow. Thanks for reading through that, hon. I do remember how significant that was, that experience, and when you took the time to write that together or put that together. And I would not say that I was in the same place. I think my honeymoon ended quite a ways before yours did. Yours lasted a lot longer than mine did. But so many of those things, I think, really just resonate with our experience over the years. I know with many of our coworkers and listeners' experiences over the years as well, of feeling that struggle of what does really draw us here, what keeps us here, and what do we do in those times of dealing with that difficulty and recognizing the reality of, man, there are difficult things, there's hard things about living here. How do we deal with that, and how do we walk through that?
Yeah, and it's a very sensitive issue. Even as I read that, I wasn't comfortable with some of the things I wrote, but I wanted to make it honest. As I was lying in bed last night and even praying about doing this episode, I really was praying that God would protect what we say and how listeners hear it, because anytime you're making generalizations about different cultures or people groups or sharing your irritations, there's potential for feelings to get hurt or people to be offended. And so, listeners, I really hope that you know this is coming from the perspective of Americans that grew up in rural Missouri living in South Asia. And that's our lens.
Yeah.
And the point of this is to help coworkers think about how to glorify God in the midst of culture stress. Culture stress that, of course, our sin is involved. Mm-hmm. But how do we shepherd our hearts in that for right. God's glory and so that we can live here long term and honor the people yeah. that we've been called to?
Yeah. I wish that we weren't just silly sinners who had to deal with this stuff. But that's the reality, is that there are things in our hearts that make it difficult for us that are, some are like truly objectively sinful. And some mm-hmm. things are just what we're used to
right.
growing up. And so right. I think that there's, like you said, all kinds of opportunities maybe for feelings to get hurt as we're comparing cultures. But this is a favorite missionary pastime, is to talk about how hard our experience is, right? We love to compare with other people about how much more we suffer than others or right. how much hotter it is where we live
we
than
do.
Other people.
Right? We always have our pros and cons list.
So if you're listening, we live in the hardest place, okay? There you go.
Yeah. You know, you said we wish we weren't silly sinners, but I do think it's a complicated issue. There's a lot of factors. So we're going to talk about some of those factors. It's not comprehensive. We are not counselors or experts. But I think after 19 years here, we can attest that the struggle is real. It's a real struggle. So we're talking about culture stress. My made-up definition of it is when an outsider goes to a new place and we feel stressed or offended by aspects of that culture because they're different than what we consider normal, right? Because of our backgrounds yeah. and our home culture. So these aren't like personal attacks on me. It's not like someone is coming and trying to do something mean to me. It's just the way that the people in this culture do life, sometimes I don't understand or like,
right.
or it offends me or makes me sad. And that response of stress is culture stress.
Yeah. Normally, I think a lot of people would be used to the term culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you use culture shock?
I think culture shock is more applicable for when you're new on the field and you're encountering things for the first time. And it can be disorienting and confusing. But you don't live in culture shock, right? Especially when you're here for years. You have moments of culture stress, seasons of culture stress, but it almost becomes just a part of your life. And so I just feel like culture stress explains more, better, the Good. Reality of long term.
Yeah, that's helpful.
But I was also thinking about, I think there's two factors that are often a part of it. There's often some kind of misunderstanding on our part or just lack of understanding. And that often leads to some kind of judgment on our part. Even though we learn in seminary in our cross-cultural communication and understanding classes, it's not better or worse. It's just different. We were taught that so much to hold back judgment. And yet the tendency is to make some kind of judgment.
No doubt. Yep.
I think to make this feel more real, I mentioned, you know, we just came back from Thailand, and when we even just got to our gate at the airport, I had a moment of, okay, we're now leaving the gentle, quiet Thai culture and entering back into South Asian culture. Mm-hmm. And you can feel that, you know, you can feel the rush of the people to get on the to get in line, to board the plane. And you can feel it when you get on the airplane with people moving all around and a bit chaotic. And I felt that in my heart. Mm-hmm. I noticed it.
Yeah.
That, uh-oh, this is not making me feel excited to go back like I want to.
Yeah. Didn't hear one car horn when we were in Thailand. Not one incident of honking.
Yes.
And we had that beat 5 minutes out the door most days here.
Right. So just one of many examples. I think we both could list some more examples than that, even from this week.
Oh, yeah.
On the streets and
even today,
things.
Driving even today. Back home from a training out just outside the city, just traffic everywhere and moving very quickly from misunderstanding to judgment about why is it this way?
Mm-hmm.
Why can it not be simpler? Why do we have to deal with all this stuff all the time?
Yeah. And I think that's probably currently in our life. The most troublesome response that we feel is that anger.
Mm-hmm.
There are seasons when sometimes culture stress can make you feel sad or anxious or like you just want to isolate and escape. So different responses, it's all on a spectrum, right? Sometimes you're just noticing things are different. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just a little irritated, but you can laugh it off. Sometimes you are angry, critical, judgmental, hard-hearted, and having very evil, unloving feelings. It is complicated. And the response of our hearts in those moments usually is a mixture of a lot of factors. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to go through 8 biblical responses to culture stress. Okay. It's a big topic. So we have 8 biblical responses.
Buckle up.
To try to just shine some light on different things going on in our hearts, yeah. different reasons behind it, and also how do we shepherd our hearts in the moment.
That's right. With the goal of helping all of us, as those who have been called out and sent out, to live and to thrive ultimately in these places, to do that in a way that glorifies Him and that fills up our hearts so that we can do what He's called us to do. I mean, this is a huge issue for us that comes at us every day. Mm-hmm. And our desire in this and bringing it into the light, talking about it, is that we would be pointing to Jesus and also filling up our own hearts so that mm-hmm. we can do what He's called us to do.
Yep. So the first factor is maybe the simplest. Sometimes we experience culture stress simply because we are ignorant. We don't understand what is going on. And when we learn more, it helps us understand and it changes how we feel about it. I know I've had countless aha moments when I suddenly understand, oh, that's why they do that, mm-hmm. right? And so, and I think that happens a lot in our first term. One example I'll give. I remember when we had first moved into our house in Nepal and one of our neighbors, a man came to our house to meet us and he never looked me in the eye. It was the three of us together in our living room. Nobody else. He never looked at me or talked to me and like almost put his back towards me and only talked to you. And I felt so dismissed and offended and angry. And later, through some other interactions, including one time when I was on a public bus with a South Asian girlfriend, and she told me, Shani, you've got to stop being so friendly to men in public. You think you're just being friendly. They are understanding it as like you're coming on to them. Hmm. And I was just being me. I thought I was being normal. I thought I was being nice. And so experiences like that helped me understand, oh, okay, men and women interact differently here. Mm-hmm. And so the man in my house who didn't talk to me, it wasn't because he was mean. Mm. It was because he just, in his world, is more comfortable talking to men. Mm-hmm. He might have thought I didn't want him to talk to him.
Right. He might have thought it was the most polite way or honoring even to me
right.
in order to do that.
Right. Yeah. So it took me time to understand that. It took me time to realize, oh, when you and I are in a taxi together, I should let you talk to the driver mostly. It's weird when I, as the woman, do. And this was in a very village-like setting.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit stronger in some of those sure. cultural differences.
Mm-hmm. And it can be difficult to discern, I think, the line between, hey, it's different and okay, and actually this is wrong. Or even maybe to allow yourself or to build up that grace towards other people to see that, you know, it is not the best, that that's the way that they interact.
Mm.
But we can still have grace towards them and kind of understand that this is how they came up. Because
right.
it's not great that you shouldn't be able to smile at a guy, right? That's
right.
not preferable. That's not like an
right.
optimal situation.
That's true, yeah.
And so we don't just have to say, hey, you know what? That's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
But we can say, hey, this is just how he grew up. This is what they understand.
This is the background.
And I can have grace towards that. I can understand
right.
that.
And if I had grown up here, I'd be the same.
That's right.
Right. But there's also things that are not even close to moral issues,
yes.
right?
Like many, many
when
things.
You have a house helper, all of our coworkers in South Asia have had culture stress
sure.
with a house helper. Everybody doesn't like the spraying the whole bathroom down with water.
Mm-hmm.
That irritates us, right?
What? You don't like getting your pants wet when you go in there and drop them?
I don't like getting everything wet. And that's an example of we just don't understand,
yep.
right? And it's not a big deal. But over time, we grow in our understanding that...
That's morally wrong, babe. That's morally wrong to spray down the entire bathroom
well, listen,
with the sprayer. I think there's some...
It's hot here. It dries quickly.
There's a verse about that.
It saves some money somewhere. On cleaner. If I had to wash my clothes by hand, I would not be wasting laundry
Boy,
on towels and washcloths and such. So we could give a lot of examples of things that happen here that there are actually some reasons for. And that coworkers around the world are going to have their own list of those things, but sometimes it truly helps to just learn. And so I think this one, not so much of like a biblical issue, but I think we can have a response of a servant's heart coming as a learner with a humble spirit wanting to learn.
Can I share one? Just because this is,
yes, let's
this
hear
is the
it.
One that we just experienced a little bit ago.
Yes.
In 19 years, it's still, I feel like when I experience this, it's still like I just arrived on the field.
Okay, what is it?
So we'll be in a training and be in line to get food. Yes. There's a big crowd.
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
People come up to get seconds, and to do that, they butt to the front of the line. To get seconds of rice before people have not got anything.
Before there's a whole line of people only.
I can't.
I know.
I can't do it.
I know. It just happened to us.
It stretches my understanding and my grace to its very limit. And I feel like I'm in junior high because it burns me up so bad. I don't want to say something like, hey, you see
me
us
too.
Back here. I want to hold up and wave wave my empty plate. And you know, the crazy thing, like we've talked about,
no one else cares.
Nobody bats an eye. They don't care.
No, they actually help
a
that
bit.
Person.
They'll be able to serve that person.
They're
of course.
We're the only ones getting all indignant.
The only ones that are getting,
Yes.
But I'm still going to be mad at that next time it happens.
I know.
I don't know if this conversation is going
to
help.
At least you can keep it to yourself.
Yeah, mostly.
Hopefully.
That's true.
Okay. So the second response that we'll talk about is that culture stress is often just the result of living in a fallen and broken world. Things don't work right in this world, and every culture on the planet, whether it's a more orderly, developed country or an underdeveloped, poorer country, every culture is saturated with sin and problems and brokenness. And I think really an important biblical principle is that we're not to expect heaven on earth, that it's wrong for us to just expect that our days would go smoothly in general and to be surprised when things go wrong. 1 Peter 1, and I'm going to have a lot of references to 1 Peter because I'm in that book right now, but it tells us in the first chapter that we are to set our hope fully on the grace that will be brought to us at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We're supposed to set our hope fully on heaven, on our inheritance, when our salvation becomes complete. So truly, when you're tired of enduring the difficult parts of the culture you're living in, you should think to yourself, I won't deal with this in heaven. Mm-hmm. There's a day coming when I won't have any of these struggles. And it should be an opportunity to look forward to heaven, to hope in heaven. And sometimes that feels like a really long time to wait.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not a fix, you know, like you can actually think, okay, I look forward to heaven, but I really wish I didn't have to deal with that for another decade.
Yeah.
But that is the biblical response.
And I think also just to see brokenness, like you said, it applies to all human cultures. I remember from the very beginning when we got here and we were meeting people, talking to local folks, and they would almost invariably bring up and ask about, hey, what do you all do like when your parents get old? Because they had heard that in America, we put our parents in convalescence homes.
People homes.
Yeah, which to them is unthinkable.
Right.
And to them is just this hugely offensive thing.
Yeah.
And so for us to think about, man, brokenness applies across the board. There's so many parts of our own culture, our home culture, that are really, really broken. And people from other cultures can see it very clearly.
Right. So number three and number four are ways that culture stress comes from the sinful nature of people. Number three is that my response to culture stress is always very impacted by my sin nature, and especially my self-centeredness. We are all naturally self-centered and prideful. And many times the frustration that I feel in those culture stress moments, like you said, when someone's butting in front of you in line, or a serviceman says they're going to...
No, I'm thinking about the greater good here, babe. I'm not just thinking about myself. I'm thinking about all the people in line who haven't got their food yet.
Okay? Right.
I'm not being self-centered here.
Sure, right.
I'm being very altruistic.
You're just such a...
I'm thinking about
justice-minded
person.
That's
right. I'm thinking about the people.
It's kind of like in parenting. I remember I read a book by Paul David Tripp where he gave this example of, you know, our hearts towards our children should be always just wanting their growth and when we put them to bed at night and they keep getting up out of bed and they're not obeying us, in that moment, we get really angry and often yell at them, if you don't get in that bed, if I have to come in here one more time. And it's not because we are so concerned with their sanctification. It's because we want to be off duty. We are tired and we're really mad that they're taking up our precious evening me time.
Yep.
It's all about us in that moment. And it's kind of similar, I think, in some of the culture stress moments. It's not like I'm just heartbroken over the sin or the lostness. Really, that's not the main issue. The main issue is I want things to go smoothly.
For me.
For me. And there are certain expectations that I have that I think I should receive. And when that doesn't happen, I can get really angry. I think a biblical response to this is to remember that we are actually small characters in God's story, that our lives are not all about us. And we forget that. We forget that we're part of this big epic story that's all about God, and God is the main character. And it begins with creation. It ends with Jesus' return. The climax of the story is the cross, and we are minor characters.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ is the main character. And so in light of that big story, having to wipe the dirty fingerprints off the wall after the service man leaves is a small thing.
Yeah.
It's not huge because I'm not the main character.
That's right.
And my day going smoothly is not the goal. God's glory is the goal.
Not only are we not the main character, but we're called to think of ourselves as, while we are his children, also his servants. And to think that we have to take up our cross daily and follow him.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to think that that would apply to only some areas of our life, like the ministry areas, but
right.
not to our everyday life. Mm-hmm. That, again, is just a complete distortion of what he came to do in our hearts, mm-hmm. as that we would see ourselves in that way.
Mm-hmm. And then number four is related because it's also due to our sin nature. Culture stress can lead to racism
mm-hmm.
that comes in our hearts. And racism is a very serious and real aspect of our sin nature. I don't know. Is it too much to say that every single person has some racism in their heart?
Probably not.
I mean, we know as believers, we know the biblical principles. Every person is created in the image of God and therefore equal and have inherent worth and dignity. We all know that there is no race that is superior to another race. But yet, our sinful flesh enjoys putting our race above others.
Or our nationality.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. I get those mixed up. Our race, our ethnicity, our background, our nationality, whatever category you choose,
right.
Our flesh likes to think we're superior.
Mm-hmm.
And we are looking for opportunities to affirm that. And the enemy is looking for ways
yeah.
to affirm that and whisper that in our ears. And so we can fall as, again, this is our lens. This is me as an American in South Asia. I can easily think, well, we are more educated. We are cleaner. We're more honest. I can just let myself fall into that. And the biblical response is the gospel. When we're feeling superior to other people groups, we're forgetting that because of Jesus, there are only two races on the earth now, believers and non-believers.
Mm.
We're also forgetting that all the good things in my life due to my home country or my background are purely gifts of grace from the Lord.
Yeah.
There's nothing in me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't choose to be born in America. I could have been born in a slum. And that is all just the Lord's grace and sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And so racism is wrong and sinful.
Yeah.
And
ugly.
And ugly. Bad for our hearts. Yeah. And we have to repent of it and fight it.
Yeah. If we could pull the lid off of this one, man, it would just be really depressing to see how deep this one goes. If we were wanting to do that, just pull out all the ways we think about that and experience that, you guys would not listen to this program anymore. But I think if we're honest with ourselves and we really truly walked in the light, mm-hmm. like a lot of us who come over here, all of us who come over here have mm-hmm. dealt with those types of things, thinking mm-hmm. that we're superior, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Yeah, it's ugly. Just really ugly, really sinful. And I think, like you said, just to remember, we were unconditionally elected to be born in the United States, right? There's no condition that we fulfilled other than just the chance of being born to parents who live there. And in the same way, even like you talked about, you know, there's only two types of people, basically, saved and unsaved. And there too, obviously, what we would believe about our salvation being by grace through faith, that doesn't imply a difference in value or worth between the two.
Right.
And not even something in terms of competency or what we would do to earn it. That's the whole point of grace, is just to say that what we have received is a gift, a gift from Him. And I think that we could think about our own citizenship, our worldly citizenship, in that same way. We've received it as a gift of grace to us because we were born in the place that we are. That doesn't imply anything good about us.
A couple of things we have learned on this over the years, and this is from observing other coworkers, a lot of good examples, sometimes not so good, right? We all can fail at this. We have, for many years, tried to have an intentional commitment as a team to not fall into making fun of or belittling the culture mm-hmm. or the people around us.
Yep.
Because we can fall into that if we're not careful, especially if we're all experiencing culture stress. It might start out as joking, but there can be this certain
tone in the conversation.
Yeah. That's belittling. And we have to really fight that. We need to fight to honor the people.
A good practice, a good thought experiment in the midst of that is to think about, would I be saying this if a local person were in the room?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's helped, honestly, a lot of times, more and more our meetings, there are local folks there. It really helps with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's especially important for team leaders and for parents to think about, because new people are looking to us.
That's right.
They're actually looking to us to see how should we respond in this stressful moment.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids, you can look at TCKs and how they talk about the culture, and it's probably similar to how their parents do.
That's right.
And so that is sobering to me.
It is. Yes. The kids just the other day might have picked up some interesting cultural insights from comments that I made while we were in traffic, right? Might have happened.
Right. We've made it through four, and I think we're going to take a break and finish this in a part two.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yes, but I want to tell you, the best is yet to come. I saved the best ones, so you have to listen to part two or you're going to miss out on the best part.
Yep.
Okay?
See you soon.
Thanks, friends.